Hey everybody, if you want to tell the world something or sell the world something, head on over to Squarespace because they're going to help you build the website of your dreams. Say you want to sell some custom merch. Well, you can set up your online store. Whether you sell physical, digital, or service products, Squarespace has the tools you need to start selling online. So go to squarespace.com/stuff right now and you will face a free trial. And when you get ready to launch, use our offer code STUFF and then you'll save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. How could you go wrong with Squarespace? In Puerto Rico, there's adventure around every corner and natural treasures waiting to be explored, like El Yunque, the only tropical rainforest in the U.S. Get swept away by natural beauty and come away with unique stories that could only be experienced in Puerto Rico and that remind you why you travel in the first place. Visits end, but stories last forever. You don't become a part of the island, it becomes a part of you. No passports required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark. There's Chuck, a.k.a. Charles W. Chuck Bryant, a.k.a. Charles Wayne Bryant.
Yeah.
Named after Wayne Coyne.
No. Thank you.
Wait, I wasn't done. And then there's Jerry.
Thank you, people who voted for us for the Webby Award.
Yes, yes.
We won.
We won the People's Voice Award.
Yeah, that's three of those for us.
And a huge congratulations to another podcast that we admire for winning the Webby.
Yeah.
99% Invisible.
Yeah, if you heard our TED Talks episode, we interviewed Roman Mars, and he won the, I guess, panel vote.
Yeah.
And then we won the People's Voice vote.
He's the industry darling. We're the populist darlings.
Yeah, as when I put it on my personal Facebook page, I tagged Roman and I said, "We won the one for people's vote, and Roman won the one based on quality." And he said, "No, they're both quality."
Yeah,
he was very sweet about it.
Yeah, I also want to say give a special props to Reply All, who gave us a run for our money for quite a while there
yeah.
in the People's Voice Award. So. Actually, check out all of the
nominees. Yeah,
because to get considered for a Webby, I mean, there's a ton of podcasts out there, and to make it into basically what amounts to the top five, you got to be pretty good. So
yeah.
Hats off to everybody, and thank you again for everyone who voted for us, and congratulations again to Roman and 99% Invisible Crew.
Agreed, we are in good company. So thanks everyone. So, Crumple Zones.
I predict this is going to be a car wreck of an episode.
Terrible.
It is terrible.
You know what I found out? That this fascinates me way more than I thought it would.
Dude, totally with you.
Because I'm not a car guy, as you know.
No, but it's not just that. This is more the history of auto safety.
Uh-huh.
But it also has more to it. There's some physics that we can grasp involved.
Very simple
that
physics.
That makes it very attractive.
Mm-hmm.
It's
kind of like big thing hit big thing, make
right.
a big boom.
Right. That's exactly right. But all you have to do is switch out like force and acceleration. You sound smart, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, there's a lot to it that there's even some nefariousness, corporate nefariousness. So I'm like, yeah, this story is everything.
Sure.
You know?
Agreed. And you know what? This made me want to do episodes on crash test dummies for one, and then maybe even a couple of others as far
like
as
Ralph Nader. We should do one on him.
Yeah, maybe. Airbags, just the whole car safety thing is way fascinating.
It really is. And to top it all off, this article was a Grabster article. So,
well, that's why I picked it.
Kaboom.
At this point, I'm just searching for his articles.
Yeah. We should just be like Grabster. Recommend some articles that you wrote that we should do.
We've done most of them.
I know.
That's the problem.
He needs to come back into the fray.
Yeah, agreed.
So sad.
And we should also shout out our colleagues here at How Stuff Works with Car Stuff. Scott and Ben,
mm-hmm.
I'm sure have covered this
uh-huh.
at some point.
Yep.
And if you're into this kind of thing, they have just a treasure trove of car, very specific, detailed car podcasts.
Emphasis on the treasure.
Yeah.
So that's Crumple Zones. If you want to know more about it, go listen to Car Stuff.
All right. Should we start with that little history bit?
Yeah.
Why not? Right?
Yeah. So, there's actually a lot of history to it. I found this really cool Museum of American History, a Smithsonian museum
They had a like an exhibit years back. It looked like the late 90s, early 2000s. And yeah. I just went through the page. And there was this really interesting essay that they had broken up over this website. There's a lot of weird history, but initially the idea of what caused wrecks has changed dramatically over the years. Because at first it was strictly driver error.
Sure.
Because the paradigm people were looking through was before you had horses and a horse could spook and bolt and run somebody down and the horse did that. It wasn't the driver. The whole idea of a horseless carriage was that it was just a lump of metal that responded to the driver's commands. And so anything that went wrong, it was the driver's fault.
Yeah.
And it took many, many years for people to realize like, actually, no, there's some serious design flaws in cars.
Right. We can actually make them safer.
Right. And once people figured that out, they didn't realize that the auto manufacturers had known this for decades.
Yeah.
And then after the public finally realized it, it took a few more decades for people to finally implement it.
Yeah, and I think the rationale for a while was, and it was the style of the day as well and the materials that were available at the time, but there was a notion of, well, let's build these things like Sherman tanks and it will make people safe.
Right. And what crumple zones proved is the exact opposite is true.
Let's build something that crumbles and crushes in just the right way.
Uh-huh.
And that's actually much safer.
And you know, it's funny. I remember when this stuff kind of came up, what, probably mid to late 90s, when people really started to show up and in normal cars.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, like, God, they make cars so cheaply compared to how they used to.
Yeah.
Like, they just come apart. Now I realize, oh, they're designed to come apart.
Right.
Because before it was like, the car's not going to do anything, but everybody inside's going to liquefy.
Yeah.
Now it's like, how about we keep the people inside safe and just let the car take the brunt of the impact?
Yeah, and one person, there are a lot of people that owe it to this design over the years, but one person squarely in the center is a dude named Bella Barenyi.
That's a nice name. There's a couple of accents and everything.
Yeah, I'm not even sure if that's right, but he was a very, very, very famous engineer and inventor for Daimler-Benz, holds more than 2,500 patents.
Like,
this guy, we all owe a debt to this dude.
So many more patents than either of us.
Yes, 2,500 more than both of us put together.
Yeah.
Do you hold a patent?
Nay.
Nah, me neither.
This is kind of shameful, really, at this point in our life.
Do you want to hold a patent?
Everybody should hold at least one patent.
Well, if you could patent things like, stupid stuff that aren't, like, real, like Chuck's method for getting out of the grocery store in a hurry.
Patent it.
I might actually try that.
What is it? Are you going to say patent pending first before you describe it?
I'll just hold on to that.
Okay.
Or maybe I could trademark that, not patent it.
No, you can patent a process.
Can you?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Or you can just type the little trademark symbol next to everything you say.
And it's like, back off, everybody.
So Bella, Mr. Barenyi, in 1952 had a patent. It was actually the very first one.
Uh-huh.
The 1959 Mercedes-Benz W111 Fintail.
You didn't say beautiful. What the patent was for.
I know. I was getting to it.
Oh, sorry.
Beautiful car. And it was the first car to hold, to have this patent pending. Well, I guess it was patent holding by that point.
Yeah.
Crunch zones on the front and rear of the car.
Yeah. And the whole reason was these crunch zones could be designed to absorb the impact from a crash.
Yeah.
And if the car absorbed the impact, then the people were less likely to absorb the impact because that impact, the force of the impact has to go somewhere.
Yeah, it ain't going nowhere.
No. And if the car is built to be rigid, the car's not going to absorb it. It's going to transfer it.
Yeah, like a big Ford Edsel hitting a Ford Fairlane. That's a lot of pounds of metal smashing into one another.
Yeah.
And the people inside aren't going to fare too well, especially back then when they're like, what's a seatbelt?
Dude. Not only what's a seatbelt, the earlier cars had plate glass windows.
Yeah, they were death machines.
The all of like the knobs and stuff now that's like touch screen.
Yeah.
Before were, they would stick out. So you just take one and go right through your forehead into your brain.
Yeah, just get impaled.
Dashboards weren't even padded. It was a steel bar that would just take the top of your head clean off.
Yeah. And then the cars ran on nuclear fuel.
Basically, it might as well.
Yeah, it was amazing. I know that they've done side-by-side examples these days where they crashed an old car because people were like, oh, the old cars were built like tanks. And so they would do the same miles per hour for like a Volvo compared to like a 1957 Ford.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's obvious what happens.
You just, like, there was a point in time where the common wisdom was you didn't wear a seatbelt even if you had it because you would prefer to be thrown from the car because it was so deadly inside the car. And there's actually a very famous
ejector seats.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
There's a famous Reader's Digest article that really captured public opinion back in 1935. It's called Eds and Sudden Death. And it's just like really gory and gruesome. And it's talking about like these cars are death traps. We need to do better than this.
Yeah, and they weren't even going that fast back then.
No.
You know? All right, so these days, it's all proprietary, the exact features and specifics of crumple zones, because these car manufacturers, they have their own methods, and they don't want to share that with everyone.
Makes sense. That's fine as long as they're building it.
That's right. But in general, what we're talking about are frame designs where certain parts of the frame of the car bend and collapse in such a way that it keeps the people and things like the gas tank safe.
Right.
Because you don't want that gas tank exploding either, which we'll get to.
Right. So let's talk about what a crash is, right?
Yeah.
A crash is where an object with mass traveling at a certain rate collides with another object.
With mass.
Yes.
Yes.
And when that happens, force is created, right? And
yeah, well, I was going to say people are saying, well, what if you don't hit a car? You're going to hit a street. You're going to tumble. You're going to hit a telephone pole.
Right.
Something is going to make impact.
Right.
Yeah.
So what's happening when you have impact is you are technically you're accelerating, but logically you should just call it decelerating in the case of a crash.
Yeah.
But it's still scientifically, it's still accelerating whenever you have a change in velocity. Right.
Okay.
So when you hit something in your car and you decelerate quickly,
yeah,
that force is transferred. The force is the mass times the rate of deceleration, right? So another way to put it is how bad you're messed up equals how heavy the car is and the object it hits times how quickly and suddenly it stops.
Yeah.
So you can actually take force in that equation and diminish it tremendously if you can diminish tremendously the rate of acceleration. If you can extend the time it takes to decelerate. And you can understand this a lot more easily if you think about when you come to a stop slowly at a stop sign.
Yeah.
As opposed to when you have to slam on the brakes and you come to a stop.
Uh-huh.
Now, the next degree above that is when you hit like a pylon and come to a complete stop. So that's what an accident is. It's that transfer of force from one object to another through this deceleration, this rapid deceleration.
Yeah. And in the case of a crumple zone, there are two things that it's trying to do there. One is to reduce that initial force from that first point of contact. When you hit that phone pole or that other car or whatever, you want to drop that force and then redistribute that away from the people.
Right. So the way you drop that force is to extend the rate of deceleration. Even by tenths of a second makes an enormous impact.
Like, well, that's all you have in the case of a crash.
Right. So Ed points out that if you change the deceleration time from 0.2 seconds to 0.8 seconds, you reduce the total force by 75%.
Huge difference.
Yeah, especially if you're in a car accident, like 75% less force being transmitted through the car that's preferable.
Yeah.
Right? So, the whole point of crumple zones, the whole thinking behind them is to basically build an area that can change this deceleration, lengthen it out some, so that the force is. And then also to kind of redistribute that force throughout the car away from the passengers. That's the whole thing behind it. It makes total sense.
All right. Well, let's take a quick break here, and we will come back and talk a little bit about how they're doing that.
Stuff you should.
Hey, everybody. It's time you heard about Squarespace. Squarespace has the tools you need to create and sell your own website. Whether it's an online course or custom merch, Squarespace has you covered.
That's right. Courses is a great program. You can start with a professional layout that fits your brand, upload video lessons to teach techniques and skills, and tailor your course with a powerful Fluid Engine editor.
That's right. With Fluid Engine, which is a next generation website design system, by the way, it's never been easier for anyone to unlock unbreakable creativity.
That's right. And don't forget the commerce side, because after that, you can charge a one-time fee or you can even sell a subscription.
Yeah. So turn your creativity into income with Squarespace courses. And right now, go to squarespace.com/stuff for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use offer code STUFF to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Squarespace. All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on! All right, so a car is, it can't be one big crumple zone. There are parts that need to be rigid.
Yes.
Like if you picture a car, picture the four seats. Let's just talk about a four-seater.
Let's do it.
I know people will be like, what about the third row? There's seven of us in here. Whatever the case, just picture a small box where the people are actually sitting.
Yeah, that's called the passenger compartment.
The passenger compartment, that is that box. That needs to be rigid. You don't want that crumpling. You want everything before that and after that crumpling to reduce that force and that rate of deceleration.
Right. So basically,
but you want that middle to be super strong and
right,
rigid.
Exactly. You don't want
it
to crumple
balance.
Because if that crumples, the people aren't protected any longer. They're exposed to all sorts of terrible stuff.
Yes.
So it does have to be rigid. But again, before they made the whole thinking was, well, just make the whole car super rigid. And the problem is there has to be something that's absorbing and redistributing that force.
Uh-huh.
And that's what the crumple zone does. So they took
yeah.
that tank of a car, and rather the whole car being that, they shrunk it down to just the passenger compartment where it's really needed,
mm-hmm.
and then made the rest of the car a big crumple zone.
Yeah, and then surrounded that part with airbags.
Yeah.
Side curtain, front, and all that stuff. So that's what protects the people. But the way this article put it, man, Ed sure has a way with words.
He really does.
He talked about thinking of it in terms of a car crash, in terms of a budget, like a monetary budget.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what that force is. And everything that happens is paying a little bit of that budget.
It's spending some of it.
Yeah, spending some, taking away from that budget. Like,
so you have like
when glass breaks, when the door... You know, when anything, any kind of damage happens,
right.
that's spending a tiny little bit of that budget because that's energy.
Right. And then eventually the budget's entirely spent and all the force has been distributed and the accident's over. The crash is over.
That's right.
Right. If you can get other parts besides the passenger compartment and even more importantly, the passengers
yeah.
to distribute that force, then 100% can be distributed before it gets to the passengers.
Yeah, you want it to be paid down to almost nothing by
right.
the time it gets to you.
I don't think it's, I get the impression, I don't think it's possible to distribute 100% of the force.
No, probably not.
Because in that case,
that's
like the person
airbags.
Wouldn't even, you wouldn't feel anything, right?
Yeah.
So, but I mean, is that possible, I guess? Could you design something to where somebody could come to a complete and sudden stop in an impact? And not experience any force whatsoever because all of it was distributed away from the person. Is that
well,
even possible?
Probably not. And that's the point the article makes. Probably not like a drivable, manufacturable car, mm-hmm. because that's the delicate balance. They still have to drive and handle in a certain way. And like when you, that's what fascinates me about this is car design. You have to take all these things that are knocking heads against one another into consideration.
Yeah.
You know, it's got a gas tank in there.
Right.
Things full of flammable fuel.
Right.
And it's crashing into things. Like, it's amazing. It's really like that delicate balance they've walked these days to make cars as safe as they are is astounding to me.
So there are some things that they have to trade off. Like, if you have a really good, crumple zone, a big one in front, you're going to have to do something with your engine, and you can only put an engine so much on top of itself mm-hmm. before it needs to just kind of go back toward the passenger, right?
Yeah, and you can only move it back so much.
And the problem is with an engine is one of the few things in the car, aside from the passenger compartment, that is rigid and basically immovable. Like, an engine's not going to crumple and bend. It's going to transmit that force. And if that engine comes into the passenger compartment, it's going to say hello and transmit that force right into the people that it runs into.
Yeah. And that, I mean, I remember old car wrecks where the engine is like in the front seat, you know, where the person used to be.
That's not a good place for an engine to be.
That's not a good place at all.
No. So there are considerations you have to do in making a crumple zone. So in that case, you would be like, well, it's likelier that the engine's going to kill the passenger by getting pushed into the passenger compartment. We're just going to have to make the crumple zone a little less.
Mm-hmm.
And then another thing, like you said, that they have to deal with is gas tanks.
Yeah, like, I never thought about that.
Most cars' fuel tanks are in the back.
Mm-hmm.
And this is really cool. Most modern cars, when you get in a rear-end collision, it's designed, the rear crumple zone is designed to go up.
Yeah.
So that the gas tank is actually lifted up and away from the point of collision, which is usually the hood of a car behind it, right?
Yeah, which happens in a fraction of a second.
Right. So it's designed to do that. That's part of a crumple zone as well. And that's a huge improvement from the 70s, specifically with the Ford Pinto. So the Ford Pinto.
Ford Pinto.
Man, this one may even deserve a podcast in and of itself, but
yeah.
I think in like 1970, definitely the 70s, people were dying in fairly low speed rear end collisions because the Pinto's fuel tank would break and catch flame and burn people alive.
Yeah, these cars were exploding in minor collisions.
And then the autopsy would show they had like basically not even a bump or a bruise.
Yeah.
They had just been burned to death because the Ford Pinto gas tank blew up. And Ford got caught very famously with some internal memos where they calculated the cost benefit of a recall as opposed to paying out lawsuits for human lives.
Yep.
And they said the human life we're going to say is about $500,000. So if, you know, X number of people sue us, we'll end up probably spending $49 million, but it cost us $137 million to recall these things and actually make them safe to protect people.
Yeah.
So they went with the just handling lawsuits.
Yeah.
And it was a big deal. And finally, there enough of a public outcry came out about it that they finally did something. And I think they did recall some Pintos. And then they were like, oh, we'll just put the gas tank in front of the rear axle so that it's not exposed during crashes.
Right.
And a couple of other improvements that cost like $1 a piece.
Yeah.
And they,
at that point, it was kind of, the Pinto.
The Pinto was dead.
Yeah. They weren't selling.
No.
Like hotcakes any longer.
No, I mean, like, you want to get a bad name for your car. Fiery Death is a good way to do it.
There was a movie. God, what was it? It was one of the spoof movies.
Oh, it was Don't Talk, Top Secret.
Was it? I was going to say
just
Top Secret.
Barely tapped the tree.
Yeah, it was a Pinto that exploded. Like, it slowed down and went thwink and then went boom.
Yeah.
I didn't think it was Top Secret though. So wasn't that World War II?
It was an anachronism.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
I'm 99.99999% sure.
That was my first thing too. My first guess. All right. So, not only gas tanks, but these days with these fancy schmancy electric and hybrid cars, you got these big battery packs and you've got toxic chemicals and, you know, you've got to protect that as well.
If in the case of a Tesla Roadster, if you get into an accident, Elon Musk himself comes and pulls you to safety. That's the level of service.
Does he give you mouth to mouth?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That might be worth it.
If you need it.
No, in the case of a Roadster, though, it is pretty neat, though. It's got a safety mechanism. It shuts off the battery packs, drains all the electric energy from the cables the instant it senses an emergency.
Yeah.
Pretty rad.
It is pretty rad.
What about if your car is tiny, though? It's pretty easy if you've got a stretch limo.
Sure.
You got plenty of things to crumple.
Yeah, crumple away.
But what about like a Mini Cooper or what's this thing?
Smart car?
Yeah, like a smart car.
So the Grabster says, well, let's use a Smart 2 as an example. They came up with crumple zones that they call crash boxes, one in the front and one in the rear.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is these are extraordinarily small cars. You've seen smart cars before.
Yeah.
It's like the kind you could put like a giant penny in the back and like pull it backward and it takes off.
Yeah, it looks like a McDonald's Happy Meal price.
Very much. except a very, very expensive one.
Sure.
But the smart car is very small. And when it does get in a crash, it does have these crumple zones and they do something. But the engineers also had to like get kind of clever too. Like, for example, I think, the transmission actually turns into its own crumple zone to redistribute the force, right?
Yeah. It's amazing. And, they used the wheels and the tires. They were like, well, these things, mm-hmm. they're going to be getting a lot of impact right away. So why not design the wheels, the suspension, the tires, to deform and break away or even rebound and distribute that kinetic energy elsewhere.
Which is pretty awesome.
It's amazing.
Yeah. And so again, we should say this is proprietary stuff for the most part, but you can really let your imagination run with these things. Like all you have to do is say, like really high end sports cars. They'll use like honeycombed structures, which give great, excellent strength under normal conditions. But when they're dented with enough force, they just completely give and crumple, and that force gets redistributed throughout the honeycomb.
I imagine more lightweight, too.
Yeah, I would guess so.
Don't you think?
Yeah.
Trains, even trains, use this technology.
Which is pretty smart, too. What they put them on the front and rear of each car compartment, right?
Yeah, each passenger car.
And then when the cars just start stacking up, it just gets distributed throughout the train rather than into the people who are trying to eat their Salisbury steak.
All right, well, let's take another break, and we'll come back and finish up with a little bit on everyone's favorite topic of the Stuff You Should Know Army, NASCAR.
Stuff You Should Know.
All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on. Hey, friends, did you know that it's estimated that 85% of all customer service interactions are automated?
Yeah, it's true, and customers are the lifeblood of all business. So you probably don't want to put that responsibility in the hands of a robot. And that's why thousands of business owners call Ruby and hire them.
That's right. Ruby is the virtual receptionist company who screens, transfers, and takes messages 24/7, all while making your customers feel special.
Yep, you definitely don't want to hire a subpar front desk person. And with Ruby, they engage with your callers in a conversational way, just like your best employee would.
That's right. Finding someone who cares about your business as much as you do feels impossible at times, but the team at Ruby are experts in providing the best customer experience and turn every ring into a relationship.
Yep, this year can be your best year yet. Small, efficient changes can make a huge impact on your bottom line.
That's right, and Ruby answers all of your calls live from right here in the U.S. They'll take messages, answer questions, route calls, and much more. Visit ruby.com, or better yet, give them a call at 844-900-RUBY.
So, Chuck, the Grabster mentions a crash in this article. Michael Waltrip's Daryl Waltrip. No, Michael Waltrip's.
Michael.
Crash at Bristol in 1990.
Did you look it up?
Yeah.
It's pretty bad.
It's insane that he not only survived, like they show him right after the crash, like waving to the crowd, like, hey, I'll be at the bar.
Yeah, he probably was too.
Oh, I would have been. I would have been like, give me a flask right now.
This is in 1990 and it was at the Bristol track in Tennessee. And, Bristol is one of the slowest, thankfully.
Uh-huh.
It's not a super speedway. It's really small.
But he was going fast.
Well, you're still racing cars.
Right.
But it's not like he wasn't going like 200 miles an hour or anything like that.
How fast was he going, do you know?
I don't know. At Bristol, I'm going to get this wrong. I mean, the top speeds are in the lower 120s and 30s.
He was still going over 100 miles an hour,
maybe
which is
fast. I don't know.
Several kilometers per hour.
Yeah.
And he just stopped all of a sudden because he hit a pylon, a concrete pylon.
Yeah, he hit, instead of like another car that will move with you or a fence that will break away, he hit something that had zero give.
Now, something else that may have saved him, but it's so slight, it seems minimal. He actually hits the guardrail a fraction of a second before he hit the concrete.
Yeah.
And you see some stuff kind of come off. And again, when you look at force, that force of the collision as a budget, that spent some of that force when it takes force for those things to be thrown clear.
Yeah.
But it was probably just minuscule compared to the actual impact that came right after that when he hits the concrete and just the car just disintegrates.
Well, and this was in 1990 before they had done a lot of the safety advances that they have today in NASCAR. And Ed points out in this article, like, he got lucky.
Yeah.
Like, he shouldn't have survived that crash with the kind of cars they had in 1990.
Right.
He got super lucky. But
yeah.
Even if you're not a car race fan and you see these wrecks on TV where the car just flies into a million pieces, that's exactly what it's supposed to be doing.
Right.
And every little piece of that car you see flying off is something that has kept that driver safe.
It's so funny to think, like, before they designed cars to save you money in the shop after a wreck.
Yeah.
But it didn't matter because it's really just saving your estate money because you're dead.
Yeah.
Now it's like, this is going to cost you $1 billion to replace this car. It's basically just totaled, but you're fine.
Right.
Like that's the thinking behind crumple zones, basically.
Yeah. That a human life was more important than a bumper that right. you don't have to replace.
Yeah.
Good move. In the 80s and 90s, actually all throughout NASCAR, history up until the 2000s, the idea was a little more that old school approach. They wanted these cars to be rigid and stiff because they perform better and they were heavier and you could drive faster and hug the road and handle better.
Yeah.
But then in 2001, and you know, it's not funny at all. I followed NASCAR one time for one season.
Really?
And the very first, cause I had friends that did it, and I was like, it's just driving in a circle. And they're like, no.
Turning left.
Just watch, Chuck. It's much more than that. Just watch. You're a smart guy. You'll get it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, all right. I watched the Daytona 500 in 2001, mm-hmm. and that's when Dale Earnhardt died.
Oh, yeah.
That was the first race I ever watched.
Wow.
Like, all the way through.
Are you like, does this happen a lot?
Well, I was scared I had something to do with it.
I don't know if you did. I don't think you're a jinx.
No, but it was very sad because if you saw that wreck, it didn't appear to be that big of a deal because the car didn't fly into a million pieces.
Yeah.
He just kind of turned up into the wall and all of a sudden Dale Earnhardt's dead.
Right. I think they even played like a wah, wah sound effect before they realized like, oh wait, he's
right.
dead.
Yeah. It was awful. So what happened in that case is he had what's called a basilar skull fracture. So
did you look these up?
Yeah, I mean, this is when you're going really fast and you stop immediately. And in the case of a race car driver, their bodies are completely strapped in.
Right.
But their heads at the time weren't.
Yeah.
And your head goes forward and your body doesn't.
Yeah. And you get a fracture, a snap where your spinal column meets your skull. That's the basilar skull fracture. Did you look it up on Google Images?
Yeah, it's awful.
Man, did you see the raccoon eyes?
Uh-uh.
There's actually if you're doing an autopsy or something, one way to if the person has like real dark circles around their eyes and especially under their eyes, that's called raccoon eyes, and it's a symptom of basilar skull fracture.
Ugh.
It's pretty crazy stuff. You probably shouldn't look that up because there's some really awful pictures of just dead people with raccoon eyes and the tops of their heads removed and stuff.
Oh, man. Well, because that wreck, because Dale Earnhardt was such a icon of the sport. I mean, you know, anytime someone dies, it's a tragedy.
Sure.
But he was like on the Mount Rushmore of race car drivers. So for him to die in a crash, they really started taking things seriously. And they created what's called the Car of Tomorrow,
uh-huh.
which is what they've been racing in, I think, since 2008. And that is, well, it's essentially just a car that's way, way, way safer.
Yeah.
We won't get into a lot of the particulars, but there's more styrofoam involved, better crumple zones.
Yeah, which is a big one.
I think it's called the Hans device is what they started wearing after that, which keeps your head attached to the seat.
Smart.
So it doesn't snap forward.
Yeah.
The drivers didn't like it as much because they couldn't look around as easily.
Right.
But, you know, it's like a give and take with safety.
Sure.
You don't want to die out there either.
Let's put some mirrors in there.
I got a rear view mirror.
Sure. We'll put a bigger one up.
I got nothing left.
No.
You got anything left?
It's crumple zones. Part of the growing auto safety suite. If you want to know more about crumple zones, type those words into the search bar at howstuffworks.com. And since I said search bar, it's time for listener mail.
I'm going to call this Hundreds of Doll Heads. Did you read this one?
Yeah.
Hey, guys, love the show. The lead episode hit home because I work for a consumer product certification company. We test everything from guitars to pacifiers to chainsaws, and one of our responsibilities is certifying low lead content. Part of our federal code mandates that surface coatings, paint on children's products and furniture contain no more than 90 parts per million of lead. This limit was originally 600 parts per million, but it was lowered after the lead toy panic of 2007. Remember that one? The great lead panic of 2007?
Yeah, I do. Do you?
No.
Yeah, remember Chinese toys turned up with lead in it, and everybody's like, get those things out of here.
I think I slept through most of 2007.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Did you have mono?
Sure.
Okay.
In our trace metals analytics lab, we test thousands of products every year for heavy metals, lead, mercury, arsenic, etc., and other restricted substances. My first job at the company was to use a razor blade and physically scrape surface coatings off toys for lead testing. This job was quite tedious due to the amount of scraped surface coating needed for acid digestion and chemical analysis. The early days of your podcast definitely helped. In one instance, our lab was asked to test only the painted eyebrows of a doll. You can imagine how little surface coating can be collected from one set of eyebrows. Due to this, I was surrounded by hundreds and hundreds of doll heads with scraped eyebrows. As you can imagine, the sights of hundreds of eyebrowless doll heads staring at you as you work is quite off-putting.
With their dead eyes?
Just want you to know, there were thousands of people working hard every day to ensure the products are safe for you and your families. Thanks, guys. Keep up the great work. And that is Matt.
Thank you, Matt. Hat is off to you for what you do for a living. Thanks for keeping us all safe and tucking us all in at night. If you want to get in touch with us, you can tweet to us at SYSK Podcast. You can join us on Facebook.com/StuffYouShouldKnow. Hang out with us on Instagram at SYSK Podcast. You can send us an email to StuffPodcast@HowStuffWorks.com. And as always, join us at our home on the web, StuffYouShouldKnow.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
Are you thirsty? Well, Richard's rainwater is caught clean before it even hits the ground. Rain is naturally pure, so there's no need for harsh chemicals or additives. Richard's rainwater contains no chlorine, no forever chemicals, no microplastics, no nothing. Enjoy the smooth, clean taste of still rainwater or the cold pressured bubbles of sparkling rainwater. Just visit richardsrainwater.com to find a retailer near you. That's richardsrainwater.com. And for a coupon, text STUFF to 251-292-8887 and receive $2 off a 12-pack case of Richard's Rainwater. Hey, if you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Use promo code STUFF. 20 to receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Switch now at Visible.com. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month.